Hey, Talkhouse listeners, it's Josh Modell. Instead of encouraging you to listen to podcasts today, I'm here to encourage you to read something great. The particular something I have in mind is the second issue of the Talkhouse Reader, the print zine spearheaded by our fantastic music editor, Annie Fell. This issue is focused on the intersection of food and music, and it features contributions from Maddie Matheson, Coleman Domingo, Squirrelflower, Sam Evian, The Blessed Madonna, and more. There are pieces about eating while on tour, the gentrification of food, cooking as a creative catalyst, and much, much more. You can order a copy today, along with the first issue, at store.talkhouse.com. Please do check it out.
Mr. Duarte, listen. Your policy of getting rid of drugs out of your country is a strong move you're doing. Doing it with violence and killing people is definitely reminiscent of the opium wars that China had faced, and they had to actually take it to that extreme. I'm an advocate. I don't think drugs should be so heavy in our communities either because of what it caused people to do. But don't you ever get the gall in your mouth and heart to call the president of the United States the son of a whore. And first of all, you don't never do that, kid. Come to my neighborhood. Come to Staten Island with
Seriously.
That.
Seriously.
You know what I mean? And I don't care if it's Ms. Clinton becomes the president, Mr. Trump, and I don't care if it's Mr. Bush. I don't care if it's Mr. Kennedy. I don't care whatever you win. You don't call the president of the United States the son of a whore.
Bass and steals in the building, flash the camera. I'ma drop the hammer. Things done changed, the hip hop sizzle and Bobby out the slammer. Hip hop start on the East Coast and it move west now down to Bama. I'ma bring it back to New York. Hold those blunts and throw your hands up. Pass me a cup of the goose in the club with the juice in the bug getting bent out. Then I'ma slide with a dime to my ride and head up to my penthouse. Oh, I'm not trying to take it slow. Working hard, cake and dough. Open up 24. We striving for that goal.
I'll stop it.
Hi, I'm Elliot Einhorn. Welcome to the Talkhouse Music Podcast. Here at the Talkhouse, we pair intelligent, notable musicians for unmoderated conversations and release a new talk each week. Regular listeners will have caught episodes like DJ Shadow chatting with Clams Casino or our recent Pitchfork Music Festival doubleheader where Brian Wilson spoke to Carly Rae Jepsen and Thundercat caught up with Kamasi Washington. Check out these and all of our past episodes and subscribe to get new ones on Stitcher or iTunes. Who would have seen this coming? Paul Banks of Interpol and RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan forming a band together? Banks and Steals, their new collaborative project, isn't just some throwaway one-off. It's the real deal. They just dropped their debut album, Anything But Words, featuring some very cool guests, including Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine, Kool Keith, and Wu-Tang Clan members Ghostface Killah, Masta Killah, and Method Man, and they're on tour now in the US and Europe. Producer and rapper Robert Diggs, better known as RZA, the leader of the Wu-Tang Clan, is a hip-hop icon. In addition to his work producing almost all of Wu-Tang's tracks, as well as many of the members' solo releases, he's also dropped a number of solo albums under various monikers and collaborated with artists as diverse as Kanye West, James Blake, and John Frusciante. An obsession with old martial arts movies is a defining element of his artistic aesthetic. And his love of film has blossomed into a parallel career as an accomplished actor, director, and score composer. He made the music for Kill Bill and Ghost Dog, and wrote and directed 2012's The Man with the Iron Fists. Paul Banks made his name as the frontman of Interpol, one of the indie guitar bands that ruled New York in the aughts. Like RZA, Banks has released music under a number of different names, including Julian Plenty and Just Playin' Banks. Perhaps unpredictably, based on the sound of his main band, he's super into hip-hop. Like, obsessed. In 2013, he released a mixtape of hip-hop tracks he produced, featuring guests like LP and Talib Kweli. I invited him to DJ on Pitchfork Radio recently in New York, and he spun a rad set of deep cuts. Hip-hop was all he wanted to talk about. The seed of Banks and Steals was planted back in 2011, when Banks laid some vocals on tracks RZA was producing. Things were casual at first, with the guys spending more time playing chess than recording. But by 2013, they were actively working on a record, fitting in recording around Interpol's 2014 El Pintor album and RZA's myriad projects. In what may be the Talkhouse's most freewheeling conversation to date, the guys sat down backstage at Lincoln Hall in Chicago to discuss RZA's enthusiasm for a recent Donald Trump speech, music production hardware versus software, the president of the Philippines' draconian drug policy and insulting President Obama, racist characters in Suicide Squad, why Bill Clinton was checking out a Chance the Rapper set, Jessica Alba, new action movies, confusing Bill Hader and Johnny Depp, and, oh yeah, their collaboration is Banks and Steels. Check it out.
I love mastering beat machines, softwares. Anytime they make something, I buy it just to master it. So for me, it's like, okay,
okay. That's part of your enjoyment.
It's part of my
Okay. That's a good attitude.
You know, I would tell you that the first beat machine the first sampler that I really got a hold of professional quality was called the SP1200.
Okay.
Right? It's made by a company called Emu, who's out of business now. And I got it without the instruction manual. Now, meanwhile, it has a screen the size of basically the size of a
fortune cookie text.
The size of a calculator.
Right.
That's the screen. And would you believe that I stayed up like maybe 36 hours in total until I mastered it, or until I knew how to make a beat, make everything it took to make it. And that particular sampler is the sampler that I use on Brain to Pain, which is a Method Man classic song, and a few other Wu songs. It was like, but I had that mastering that sampler gave me the inspiration to always buy another machine and don't read the manual. See, when you gave me when we got the montage, I was like, you know, I didn't want to get the manual. Just let me bring it home for a day. Let me talk to her. Send her to my house.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that's partly to do because I think you retain information, that kind of information, better from doing and discovering rather than just like reading.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, because I did that with iMovie when I first was making like little videos and stuff. I had a 14-hour day one day. I got out of bed in my underwear, coffee, started a video, didn't stop until like 11 p.m. that night. Didn't even get dressed. Right. And like that, but that was out of joy.
Right.
That was out of like, so I conquered the program because that was fun for me. With something like some of these audio software, I feel like because I'm trying to record and do other things, I don't want the stumbling block of the functionality of it. You know, I just want to know like, cool, I did this, now I'm moving on to the next thing. Oh, I got to tweak that. And when every little step is now like a different, I don't know, I got to find the drop window that shows me where the fucking logo is for what I'm trying to do all over again. That isn't joyful for me. That's like a major interruption to my flow.
But that's been one of the biggest problems with software versus hardware nowadays, because hardware actually does have a definitive hit that button, hit play, record, sample, you know, like the MPC, it has a definitive thing on it. And what happened to a lot of producers, they didn't cross over to the digital DAWs. They didn't cross over to those because of the functionality. But I think that they're getting better because they're realizing that, and this is true, if you got to go through all those functions, you forget your idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the main thing is, what's the fastest way you can capture an idea? And Pro Tools has delivered on that.
Yeah.
Oh, so anyway, we're here. My name is DeRizza.
My name is Paul Banks.
We are Banks and Stills. We're chilling right here. You guys kind of came in the middle of our conversation. But us geeking out.
So what are we talking about?
After we finished talking about?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's we're in Chicago, for those who want to know where we at the moment. You know what I mean? I've been up watching the news all morning.
Why? What's up?
Well, Trump was on. You know what I mean? He did his best speech today.
Yep.
Yeah. He did it like he may have got a few more fans today.
Hmm.
Yeah. Talking about education, talking about every kid getting a chance to you know, to go to the school of choice and being funded to go to that school. And he said something like, and the money follows the kid, you know? The money follows the kid. So, like, so there's money that's invested into the kid. And as the kid continues, there's money that's continuing to be open to him.
Right.
So, you know, his delivery today is good delivery.
Okay.
I usually kind of, like, laugh at him all the time because he, you know, he just be rambling. Now,
that's the he was sort of known to be, for the people that were getting behind him, they kind of liked the freedom of his candid speaking. And then I sort of noticed when he started getting like on script and on message, when like the party was sort of like, yo, you can't be saying all this crazy shit, like stick to the message. I think people found him a little more dull and less convincing because it was less the real guy.
Right.
But now it sounds like maybe you're saying he found his footing with that.
Yeah, I think he found, because now he's repeating, but he's repeating in chunks. Mm. So it's more like he's repeating the 16 bar phrase rather than just keep going, drink. Drip, come on, drink. He's like, he ain't doing that now. Now he's saying the verse, then he's bringing the hook in, then he's repeating the verse. So I was actually, it was good to hear him say that. Look, he got a strong chance, right, to win. And I know a lot of us is, you know, especially like in the black community, we've, a lot of people feel that he doesn't represent, you know, our cause or our struggle. And we probably felt that about most politicians, but we always have more hope with the Democrats because, you know, I guess some of the programs seem to trickle down to us. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it got such a phobia against this, just a phobia against the white supremacist idea in today's age to be perpetrated upon us. And whether he's one of those people or not, he resembles it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he talks with that ego, it, you know, which to me, I'm from New York, so I know how he's talking. To me, I don't hear the ego. I'm like, that's New York, man.
Uh-huh.
You could go to any pizzeria and talk to a guy like that, and you're going to get the same thing. The guy's going to serve you a slice of pizza as if you're not paying for it. And if you don't want it, he's going to move it, put it back in the oven and move to the next customer.
Right.
You know what I mean? He has that personality, and that's, I'm from New York, so I respect it. But around the rest of the country, I think it's a tough thing, right? But like I said, today was the first time me, even as a guy who's concerned about our country, when he went to the education thing today, I was like, well, at least somebody is you know, at least he's getting a focus. So then later on, though, you know, like 20 minutes later on the news, and he said, well, that was Trump's great speech. And they go, yeah, he really followed the teleprompter well.
Right.
But you know what?
That's what I'm saying. Were you watching Fox, though?
Yeah, I was watching Fox.
Okay, so they're saying it was a great speech. All right.
Yeah, no.
No, I'm not. That doesn't impact your opinion. I was just curious.
Like, yeah, I like to watch Fox because they keep it gully.
Right. Wow.
You know what I mean? But anyway, what you think about it?
I mean, I feel like he said things in his campaign that were dangerous and very fucked up about immigration, about Muslims.
Yeah.
Very fucked up things. But I also didn't really think at any point that were he to come into power that he would actually act on those things. I thought that they were kind of hyperbole and just trying to rally a certain section of the voting public around kind of a little bit exaggerated, but kind of motivates very right-wing people. And so like, yeah, you're talking
that's
to me.
Man.
You know,
hey,
yeah. I don't really think a guy with his education and intelligence is going to try and implement any of the ridiculous things that he's talked about doing. Whether or not you can forgive him for ever having said it is another question. I know most of my family and stuff, they're kind of like, you hear my brother, he's like outraged at the possibility that this guy is even got the nom. You know what I mean?
Right.
Personally, I kind of feel like, I don't know, some of this is politics and maybe it's dopey what he said.
Right.
But it does make me, there's two things I wanted to bring up with you on politics. Firstly, why did Bill Clinton go see Chance the Rapper when we were there?
Yeah.
And secondly, remember I brought up the Filipino president the other day?
Yeah.
Having people just murder people in the streets?
Yeah.
That shit's popping off at the moment too. But let's first Bill.
Okay.
Why do you think Bill went to see Chance the Rapper?
You know
what? Where were we when that happened?
We was in Made in America, Philadelphia Festival. And we're chilling. Chance the Rapper's on stage doing his thing. We all enjoying it. And here comes Bill Clinton.
15 feet from us.
Yeah, right there. And he's there checking out Chance the Rapper. He walks down the artist lane.
Yeah.
Which we didn't want to walk down that lane because we kind of like, you know, we're a little cool. Like we're not, you know, we're here to see the dude, but we're not going to go and we're not going
to
go ahead and just.
No, we were off to the side. We had a nice position.
Yeah, we're chilling right
But we
here.
Saw him walk because he was going to, I guess he was between the barricade and the stage, right? He was like right there in front of Chance. And Chance is dope. So don't get me wrong. It was a great show. But what is Bill Clinton doing there?
What is Bill Clinton? I don't know. I guess he wanted to.
Is that his favorite musician?
It might be his favorite artist, right?
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Clinton, first of all, we appreciate you coming out to the hip-hop concerts. You know what I mean? At least you can, you know? You know what? Bill is a trumpet player, ain't he?
That's right. No, sax.
Sax. Maybe he was there to see
Donnie Trumpet.
Donnie Trumpet.
Yeah, our boy.
Yeah. Okay, second question.
Yeah, dude. So the Filipino dude who basically told him when he came into power, he's like, anybody that you know who's on drugs or dealing drugs, go kill him. It's cool. Don't worry about it.
Have you heard about this?
And so they've been doing it. Well, no, because it really got in the news because he was supposed to meet with Obama. And he said, if you ask me, the first quote I heard, he said, is if you ask me about my policy of killing drugs, I'm a curse at you. And then the next thing he says is he says something else. And then I think it culminated with he called Barack Obama a son of a whore. And so at that point, before that, I think it was sort of they were debating, is Barack Obama going to have this meeting or not? Like, we'll get back to you. Like, currently,
no meeting.
Not to TBD, you know? Yeah. And then after the son of a whore just canceled, like, nah, we ain't meeting.
Hold on,
meeting.
Yeah, no, hold on, and hold on, apparently hold on. The Filipino stock market, what's his name? What's that guy's name?
Duarte?
Mr. Duarte, listen, your policy of getting rid of drugs out of your country is a strong move you're doing. Doing it with violence and killing people is definitely reminiscent of the opium wars that China had faced. And they had to actually take it to that extreme. I'm an advocate. I don't think drugs should be so heavy in our communities either because of what it caused people to do. But don't you ever get the gall in your mouth and heart to call the president of the United States the son of a whore. And I don't, first of all, you don't never do that, kid. Come to my neighborhood. Come to Staten Island with
seriously.
That.
Seriously.
You know what I mean? And I don't care if it's Ms. Clinton becomes the president, Mr. Trump, and I don't care if it's Mr. Bush, I don't care if it's Mr. Kennedy, I don't care whatever you win. You don't call the president of the United States the son of a whore. You know what I mean? Because really, if you think about it, kid, you come over here and you want to see a lot of the whores, think about who you're going to see.
Apparently
that's kind of hard body, but
their stock market crashed as a result.
Yeah, you know. I mean, look, drugs can destroy a country. That's the fact. It's destroyed many countries. It's destroying my neighborhoods. And so we do need to find a way to get out of that, you know what I mean, and how to fix that. And I don't think that our president should have the right to tell that president what he has to do to fix his country, like he can't tell us what to do to fix our country. But it has to be mutual respect.
I think where the thing is that it was crossed, that crosses over into like really fucked up human rights violations. And I feel like normally we wouldn't try and intercede with a country like, I don't think we have much of an economic investment. I don't actually know what I'm talking about, but I don't, I think a lot of shit could go on in the Philippines without us commenting on
right.
it. But that is sort of the,
I like the
now
is
you
it,
got
is
no dude,
the
problems. Yeah.
I mean, we love Philippines.
That's, but the problem, just one thing that it brought up for me is that it's interesting because I maybe a very hard line on drugs is an interesting argument. I personally kind of think, you know, we shouldn't sweat drugs much at all. But the problem with what this guy's doing, even if you were one of these, you know, someone who had a hardline idea about, you know, drug policing, there's no due process. It's just like dead bodies. So how do you find out after the fact, like, that this guy really was selling heroin to fucking children, for instance, because he's dead? And so it just really highlights the point of having a fucking justice system and due process because, like, who the fuck are you to decide that this person is, in fact, committing the crime? He's given the citizens authority to just murder drug dealers. So you could just go murder somebody that fucking you owe money to and say, nah, I totally saw that guy, like, selling crack. Do you know what I mean? There's no due process. So it's just that's out of control.
It's tough, but it's, you know, it depends on the situation of, now I'm only saying this as a, look, I got a dictator part of me. I got a Democrat part of me. That's just me. That's just how I grew up. That's what I've become.
Yeah.
My dictator part is like, yo, when you're trying to fix something that's broke, you got to sometimes, it's like, you got to amputate.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you got to amputate. And his measure to me is amputating. He's like, yo.
But we had that with the Rockefeller laws, and it is super fucked up. Rockefeller, that had people going to prison for like 25 years for like minor weed or like three hits of acid, and you're in jail for like 30 years.
That's not amputation.
It's dumber and worse. Even.
It's worse than amputation.
So, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's a hard one. It's a hard one. I only say that because if drugs is destroying your country and destroying the growth of your people and the growth of your economics and the growth of your culture.
Well, is your shitty economics and lack of education what's destroying your country, or is it the drugs?
Well, I guess he's starting with the drugs because,
right.
Because any time I cut school when I was in high school to get high, and I had a whole class, you know, like a whole, everybody who cut, they all hung together. We was all drinking and getting high. So sometimes once you get introduced to something like that, it can really totally change your dynamic on life and stop the progress of your community, your family, and all these things. So, I mean, it's a delicate thing. And I don't believe death, you know, should be, I think everything should live. So I'm a pro-life guy, right? He's taking a hard stand on it. But what he does by doing that is that he's planting such a fear in those who are committing the crime that maybe they will stop the crime. And maybe that crime or that way of life won't carry on to the next generation.
Absolutely. But maybe 10, 15 innocent people got murdered along the way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sad. Anyway.
I don't know if we should go into Suicide Squad, but I did go see Mechanic yesterday.
Resurrection. Oh, you saw the Mechanic? Instead of the Infiltrator?
That wasn't planned.
Did you enjoy the Mechanic?
Eh.
I couldn't see how you could go see that.
Really?
No.
You didn't even go see it?
Nah, I couldn't go see. No, I come. First of all, I know the original
Mechanic.
You
didn't want to see the pool thing?
No, the original Mechanic, Charles Bronson, okay? Classic film. You know, you can watch it anytime. It's just something about it. You know, it was the cinematography, the film, the whole setting. The Mechanic that Jason made over the first one, okay, cool, did a good job. But the second one is more like, to me, just from the trailer and the synopsis, like, oh, you're going to do this again.
Yeah.
And was it that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
But it was also, Alba shows up.
That's the only reason I almost bought a ticket. I'm not going to lie. Whoa. Jessica Alba being in that movie almost got my $12. She almost got my $12. She still may get it.
Dude.
Dude. So she's worth the $12.
She is looking $20. Is looking well.
Okay. I love Jessica Alba. I think she's one of the prettiest ladies in Hollywood. You know what I mean? I mean, respect to her family. And I know she has a family, but I'm a big fan of her physical appearance.
But yeah, the film made me think a lot about the economics of Hollywood, because it did. It felt like, wow, they must have figured out a way to make this mad cheap. And then they just paid fucking Tommy Lee a chunk, Alba a chunk, Statham a chunk, and then somehow figured out how to like make everything else for like $2 million. You know, I mean, right. It really.
But the quality was
it doesn't
down
feel
there.
Low production. I mean, there's some really shitty CGI. No, it's terrible. And I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Statham and stuff.
Yeah, I'm a
no,
fan of him. I'm a fan of movie. Jessica. I'm a fan of Tommy Lee.
Yeah.
But I knew that reboot was not going to be.
But I'll see shitty action movies. And I thought you were on that page, but obviously.
No, I see shitty action movies too. But nowadays I go see them on Netflix.
Yeah.
I'd rather wait till
they didn't have Infiltrator wasn't playing at that theater. They only had that and like Don't Breathe or something. And okay. Suicide Squad, Sausage Party.
Yes, I'm gonna see them.
Still haven't seen Sausage Party, right?
No. My wife told me to wait for her on that.
That's
one.
Good.
I heard that's great.
Good.
That's real Seth Rogen.
Dude, it's everybody's in it. Jonah Hill.
I mean, those are the funniest guys in the game.
The young looking dude from Arrested Development. What's his name? The real baby face guy. Who's
Mike Sierra?
Thank you, Mike Sierra.
Yeah.
Those Hader. Guys. Hader kills it. There's a character that I thought was Johnny Depp for the entire film, like as a Native American. And I was like, oh man, Johnny Depp, like good call, like way to go to be in this movie. But then at the end, I watched the credit, and I guess it's Bill Hader, but I swear it's Bill Hader doing a Johnny Depp impersonation to be a Native American. It's funny.
Those guys are batting at least 90% when it comes to movies. Every time they put a movie out, you guarantee, especially if you're smoking, you had a little smoke before you went in.
I was advised to have a little smoke beforehand.
A little smoke, and you go watch their movies, you're gonna be entertained. But on The Mechanic, was you smoking on that one or you saw that one clean?
50-50.
Okay. I mean,
but that,
like I said, I love action films. I may pay the $12 for it. When I thought I'd wait to see that, like, you know, on HBO or something when it popped up, or maybe catch it early on Netflix when it comes. But I'm looking for now for the action for me. I'm looking for something. You know, since Marvel is doing such a great job in all the action movies and all the, like, you got to come hard now, yo.
Should we talk about Suicide Squad a little bit?
Okay, a little bit.
About how uncomfortable I was by the alligator character.
Good. This young man here, first of all, y'all, you're listening to the RZA, aka Bobby Stills, my buddy over here.
Paul Banks.
We are Banks and Stills, and we are just sitting here chilling, talking. We don't know how long we're going to be talking, but we're talking right now. And we're about to talk about something else.
I just was uncomfortable about this alligator character in Suicide Squad, who I felt was just doing something that we're not you know, supposed to be doing anymore in Hollywood films, which is playing a very bad one-dimensional stereotype.
Yeah, he felt like he was playing like a basically a dude for
Yo,
the
man. BET. Have you seen this Suicide Squad? Dude,
that's crazy.
It goes real, real hairy with this one character. Like, I don't know. Maybe I lost my sense of humor, but it felt pretty racist.
Yeah, I saw Suicide Squad with my young son, who's just a big, big fan, you know, 10-year-old. And so I probably didn't see, like, I actually read, when you talked about the racist stereotype, and it's probably right there in my face. But when you're with your son and you're just watching the movie and you're kind of just having the fun of the movie, you kind of overlook all the things about that movie the movie got a very, very low rating, but my kid loved it. You know what I mean? And his favorite character was Jay Hernandez played that fire character.
No, it's funny. And, yeah. And then
Diablo?
Yeah. And I was reading reviews and they say, well, that character's racist too. But I like that character a lot.
Right.
Like I was like, oh, this dude's a badass. But so maybe it's speaking more about me than about the fact that that particular alligator character was super racist. Maybe it was all super racist. And for some reason, I focused on that one.
Right.
Because, yeah, the Mexican guy was dope.
Yeah, you think about it, though. I mean, like I said, I'm going to watch it again now with a third eye. I watched it with only two eyes. And I was excited when I saw when I saw Will Smith, like the scene when it was like, you know, do something and he just got those guns and he's just
That's a great scene.
And my adrenaline never went down from that point on.
Yeah, when he shoot, like when you realize there's only one bullet hole on each target at the end and they're just like glowing because of all the bullets going through.
No, not that scene.
That's a good scene.
That's a good scene too. Yeah. But when he had to practically use it against all those aliens, when he became the dude that just shot it saved everybody.
Oh, yeah. For he gets on top of the car
in
the front.
That was like a John Wick scene right there.
That was cool.
So that scene right there got me. And then watching Margot
Robbie.
Oh, man. She really, to me, you know, she really slayed that film. Like, I was digging her in that film.
Yeah, yeah.
That character.
It reminds me now that I'm thinking back about Jennifer Jason Leigh from Hateful Eight.
Oh,
That's one of the best performances, absolutely. It's an incredible, incredible performance.
That was incredible. I mean, I'm not going to... And Margot did a great job in Suicide Squad, but she didn't go there now.
No, she didn't go there.
She didn't go there.
But it is a great... It's a great unhinged female, like, masochist. You know, they're both kind of masochistic.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I'm going to watch it again for the racism. I know the critics gave it a bad review. But I think some movies are made to entertain the youth.
I hear you. It's just because they made a stink out of, and I mentioned this in Transformers, the first Transformers, there was a big hubbub about some racist robots.
Two robots. Hey,
and then you watch, and it's like, man, okay, that's the same. It's like, we're not supposed to do certain things. And then lo and behold, here's a movie that's like doing certain things that I thought we had all agreed.
Yeah,
we aren't doing that anymore. You know,
though we got past that.
Like you can't do the racist Chinese person with the hat and the buck teeth.
Right.
You know,
well, I'm writing a film right now. Well, I'm writing one character is just a racist redneck.
Yeah, and you should have license as an artist to be able to do that. You should.
Yeah, he's like, he don't like nobody. You know what I mean?
I just felt because the alligator had no dimension other than to say shit like, I come from the sewer. I got a sewer to get back to. You know, like just sort of really, I got to ask you a question. Like he has like five lines and they're all like appalling.
Yeah, and so David, you know, you're known as one of the David Ayers we're talking to, a good guy.
Oh, and I should say, his last two films, I loved him. Fury is one of my,
he's one of the best
love
writers.
Fury, man.
He got an Oscar for his writing, right?
Right, okay.
So this guy can write.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't take nothing
away from
his
other pictures.
But maybe on that one, he smoked a little bit. You know what I mean? And he just let it go. But we love your films, yo, and Fury... Definitely.
Fury's amazing.
That was amazing. And Michael Peña, what about this dude, man?
Killing it.
Is this guy on fire or
but
what?
But did you ever see Observe and Report, which was the first film that made me notice Michael Peña?
I didn't see that.
You
got to
see that. He is fucking, that was his star turn for me. I mean, I don't think, after that, he blew up. So I think a lot of people noticed, but he killed it in that film, which is an amazing film.
You know which film that got me into Michael Peña that I first noticed him? And you might have seen this one, 30 Seconds or Less.
No, I didn't see that.
He comes in.
Don't get me started. Is this the pizza bomb delivery movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Finish your thought, and I got a thought about that.
He came in there as the Mexican dude, you know, the gangster type. He slayed it. He was funny. His timing was perfect. you know, his face, everything. But then when I seen him in, I think,
Destruction in the
L.A. No, L.A. When the aliens came to L.A.
Battlefield L.A.?
Battlefield L.A. And he played the father. Those two dynamics for me, I was like, this dude has magic.
Yeah. No, he's great.
He's destined for an Oscar.
Okay. Wow.
I think he has... I don't know if any Latin brothers ever won an Oscar. Has any Latin brothers ever won an Oscar? Somebody check that for me.
Yeah.
But if... Oh, yeah, no, of course. One did. My man from No Country for Old Men.
Javier Bardem.
Yeah. So he's great.
He's great. Spanish.
Yeah, so he got him.
European.
Yeah.
Maybe has a South American or Central American actor won is a question.
Yeah, listen. Well, Michael, I'm rooting for you, boy, because I think you got you on fire. Even in Ant-Man, his comedy... He went back to his comedy.
Oh, he's got it, dude.
He's really got
something. But so 30 seconds or less, the reason I didn't see that movie was because I thought that the premise was super offensive because I was fixated on a case that happened in like 1999 or 2000 where some dude showed up on the side of a highway saying, yo, somebody put this fucking bomb on me. Please get it off.
Wow.
And like, he robbed a bank. He maybe robbed two banks. And then he like went to the cops on the side of the road and was like, dude, I'm robbing banks because someone's making me do that. They put this fucking bomb on my chest. Please get it the fuck off
me. That happened for real?
And then it blew up. And he died. And it's
Holy
on camera.
Shit.
So that's a real thing where somebody put a bomb on somebody and said, go rob banks for me. And then that person died. And the contraption that was put on this dude was like, I don't think they ever figured out exactly who did it, but it's some genius level fucking gadgetry involved where the guy couldn't take it off himself. So I just felt like when I saw the premise of that movie, I was like, yo, that's a pretty sad news event that actually took place to make a kind of slapstick comedy about.
That was funny.
So that's
shit,
why I didn't see it. It was funny.
Danny McBride also, dude. That dude is a fucking fool.
Yeah, he's the shit.
He's on fire. So anyway, my name is DeRizza, a.k.a. Bobby Stills.
I'm Paul Banks.
We're doing a live podcast, just talking about a lot of different things. We talked about a lot of people and shit, and hope nobody get offended by the shit we said about them. But hey, you know, we talking, it's early, we just had our coffee and shit. I guess we should now maybe talk about ourselves and shit just to kind of equal out the battlefield or some shit. The playing field, as they say. Well, yeah, what do you think about our collaboration versus our collaborations in the past?
It's been a lot of fun.
I agree.
I feel like I've really only collaborated in depth with, you know, a few people, with my band, with you, in terms of writing and creating music. Other than that, I've done it primarily by myself. And it's just a very different experience, man. I don't know, when I was, I was a teenager almost when I first joined Interpol, and that was, you know, my learning experience collaborating with people. But then there's been other people who I've tried to collaborate with and like didn't really kind of gel, didn't vibe. So I feel like, you know, we have that rare thing, which is just two people whose, you know, creativity can be complementary and we can wind up with something totally different than what either of us could do by ourselves. And it's been enjoyable.
Yeah, I guess I could echo those words because I was checking out some of our music and I was like, you know, there's a lot of songs on our record that wouldn't fit normally, definitely in my Wu-Tang catalog. And even on my solo projects, you know, when I did Bobby Digital, it's songs on our record that don't fit. It only fits in our world of what our collaboration brings together. And for me, that's, you know, that's fulfilling and exciting. You know what I mean? Because it's like when you pour, you know, you ever pour different juices together from your refrigerator? You may have. I don't know if you do this, but I do though. I may get like, I try different juices together. You know, I may get orange and get some mango, some white grape, you know what I mean? And it's a blueberry and I'll shake that up.
Oh, shit.
And I'll make that a drink. And I do it because my son, he sees me drinking cocktails, so I make him a fruit cocktail.
Right? Yeah, cool.
But you never know what the flavor is going to be, but it sometimes always comes out good. I feel like we have a chemistry that's unique that when we put it together, it makes something unique. You know, being who we are is who we are. But I think we multiply creatively. If I could put it in a simple term, I think when me and Paul come together, there's a creative multiplication that happens. And, you know, I would love for the fans to absorb it and to join this ride with us. Right?
Absolutely.
We've been on the road now for about 2 weeks and playing different venues. How's that been for you playing music, in this capacity?
It's a lot of fun, and it feels like it's kind of developing as we go. the last three shows in a row have just been better and better and better. So yeah, I'm kind of bummed this is the last show of this leg, actually, because we're going places.
So we got a show in Chicago, then we got like a week off.
Yeah.
Then we got James Corden.
Oh shit, I forgot about that.
That's gonna be exciting. Well, we're out here showing the world our music. We're having fun. Our record is called Banks and Stills, Anything But Words. I know we just gave you guys a lot of words over the last 30, 40 minutes. But nah, seriously, if you love music, I would say definitely check out our record.
Check it out.
And get back at us, yo. Banks and Stills in the building.
Thanks. You very much.
I shot the wolf with a silver bullet. He didn't think that I would pull it. Trying to block the path I was headed. I'm trying to get back on my good foot. They scratching the back of the good book. Shit, little nigga, that's a good look. Black hooded, 40 acres of land developed, 40 acres wooded. So much gold, we don't know where to put it. Follow the rainbow and pop the cook with. I call Paul the bacon.
Hi, I'm Elia Einhorn, and you've been listening to RZA and Paul Banks on the Talkhouse Music Podcast. Subscribe to Talkhouse Music and Talkhouse Film Podcasts on Stitcher or iTunes. Upcoming artist pairings include Wyclef Jean discussing the Fugees album The Score 20 Years On with the Arcade Fire's Will Butler, and electronic music pioneer Jean-Michel Jarre with Vince Clark, the songwriter behind huge hits for his ex-groups Depeche Mode and Yazoo, as well as his current band Erasure. This talk was recorded and mixed by Mark Yoshizumi. Till next time.